It's the Edinburgh Fringe. It's still the first week. We're here in the noisy hub of Fringe Central, and I'm joined by Brian Parks, who I think he'd call himself a writer and not feel insulted.
I'll take it.
Yeah, and David Calvito, who's having to get used to playing the older characters in plays now. David, is there anything you want to ask me?
Yes, Paul, I want to ask you just a couple of quick questions. First, how long have you been coming to the festival?
My first Fringe was a solo show in 1999.
That you performed?
I did, yes. And I had a review from the List that said it was a crime the director's parents were ever born to give birth to a show this awful.
Oh.
I got one worse than that. I once directed a play, and the bad review was, David Calvito's direction is delicately poised between the incompetent and the ludicrous.
I would have given my right arm for that one instead of mine. So you had a second question.
Yes, the other... I want to tell a story, you know, about Brian Parks' work. And the question is, do you remember his... here's my question. What was the earliest Brian Parks play in Edinburgh that you remember?
The House.
Really?
Yeah.
No, what are you talking about? We talked about Enterprise last
year. Yeah, Enterprise. Definitely. I mean, that sticks out. Okay. But, because that's stuff I'm also interested in my day job as well.
Right. So yesterday I went to see a show called Flies... what's that company that I can't speak French? Les Fonds Titans Français, toi.
Les Enfants Terribles?
That's
like
it.
That?
Yeah, that's it. Say that.
Les Enfants Terribles?
Yes, I can't say that.
It's French.
Yes, I
David.
Understand. And I'm American. So, but one of the guys, Oliver Langsley, I went to see a show, and I saw him afterward, and he said, oh, I loved your show, The House, the other day. And he said, was it by the writer who also wrote Goner? And Goner was in Edinburgh 16 years ago.
Yeah, 2002.
2002. And I said, yeah. Well, you know that show? He says, I've never forgotten that show. My partner, my producing partner, and I still talk about it. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Script is available.
And the script is available if you email bparks3000. I just wanted to say that Brian just has an amazing track record, and I've been lucky enough to be involved in one way or another, usually as an actor, once as a director, and more times than I like as a producer.
And that's really interesting, but I just want to observe that your second question to me was just really an occasion to talk about yourself. Is that right?
No, I believe I was talking about Brian, Paul.
Okay.
So here we are, and it's good that we're talking about Brian. Brian, was there a moment that you would have referred to yourself as a writer as the answer to the question, what do you do? And was there a moment before that that you called yourself something else?
Well, that's still a tricky thing because I'm in my other job is I've been a newspaper editor, now a website editor, in addition to being a playwright. So I actually sort of define myself as sort of both those things, a writer-editor. Like my business card says writer and editor, et cetera. But I think increasingly over the past several years, I've had more time and more productions. And so the writer self-identity side has gotten bigger and more satisfying.
But like when I was 5 or 6, and my parents remind me that I had loads of notebooks and pens, you know.
Yes.
And so there was something going on there that shows some clues about later.
And I agree. I think that's probably also when I started writing little science fiction stories as a 10-year-old. And there was some, like, writerly desire always.
Can you just name drop me some science fiction authors?
At the time, I don't read much of it anymore, though but I read a lot of Robert Heinlein and some Ben Bova. And who else was I a fan of? I want to read, there's a Samuel Delaney book that I've been recommended that I would not like to read. But those were some of the influential ones for me. And of course, Arthur C. Clarke, because I loved 2001.
Well, I mean, I began with Michael Moorcock, which was more fantasy, but then found myself in Kurt Vonnegut. Okay. But Heinlein would have had trouble with the Me Too movement at the moment, wouldn't he?
Probably, I don't remember them well enough, but I'm not surprised. I bet a lot of science fiction writers would have had some problems.
If you can remember this, can you just describe the making of your first play?
Well, the first one that was produced or the first one that I wrote?
Okay, let's do both of those because they could have a great deal of difference in time, maybe.
Now, the first one that I wrote, I'm having some trouble remembering, but it came after seeing the first play I ever loved, which was seeing Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
And I played Hamlet in that.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I saw that in Detroit, where I'm from, And I, you know, I'd seen other plays before that, but I'd never seen, I never really enjoyed myself, and that was the first time I was really, really taken. And it's also a play I never want to see again, because I'll read it, but I never want to see another production because the first production was so moving to me. So to answer your question, then I started writing Imitation Beckett and Imitation, you know, Stopper that probably wasn't very good.
In those first plays, could I use phrases, as a reviewer, could I identify things in the way you wrote those first plays that would that I could find in the house? Ways that you write, tricks that you use?
No, those ones were very different. Like I said, they were more like Imitation Beckett, you know.
No, you've absolutely unhinged from your roots.
Right. And that's, but the first play I had produced in San Francisco was kind of, if you're looking back on it, it was kind of like a mashup I'm just trying to remember the
it's what, when you get older you get lost in the memories and then there's only silence.
I'm sorry, it was like a mashup of a Pinter play combined with Arsenic and Old Lace. So somehow the weirdness starts combining into other sorts of things.
The house?
No. This is the first play I had produced called Out of the Way.
That's interesting. David Calvito, I just want to try something, a new technique that we use in interviewing called abusive praise. Okay? lean into this. Okay. You're a really fine actor, David Calvito.
Correct.
No, you're a fine actor.
Yes, it's true.
No, you're a fine actor.
Well, I won't argue with you.
No, but you're really... don't give me that bullshit. You really are a fine actor.
One of the best.
Okay, so you've agreed to all of that. Okay, now I need some evidence.
Evidence? Well, they always...
He's got lots of prizes.
I got prizes. Okay, yeah. You know how we value awards in this society. I've got 2 acting awards and 4 nominations for acting awards. So take that in your... Put that in your sack and...
He's been on the West End.
Okay, so
I've been on the West End with the legendary Robert Vaughn.
Okay, but I rip all those certificates off the wall and smash them on the floor, and then I pull the wall aside, and then the curtain that's behind that, and you're standing there a bit more humble and naked.
Right.
What would you identify? And this is to pass on to maybe the budding actors at the fringe. What are the qualities of you that have led to that acclaim, and are you aware of them?
I've given my best performances when I've known my lines the best. And it's the secret.
That is true.
Ask any great actor, and they, whenever like people like, I've seen Al Pacino do it, a couple others I can't remember, and they're asked the question, how what's the secret? And Pacino answers, he was with James Lipton. He said, you've got to really know your lines. And the audience laughed, and I knew that Pacino was being serious, and he just let it go. You have to know it so well that you can, it's sort of like, you know how you can? Some people can type 60 words a minute and carry on a conversation at the same time. You got to get there.
Okay, so that's good advice. Now, what about in the fact that when we watch The House, if people come away and go, "That's a great play," well, they're going to appreciate the writing, but they are going to believe these 4 characters and they are going to enter that world.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing at this level to be in character, to be able to step off and go, "That worked"? Okay, apart from learning the fucking lines.
No, it's not just learning the lines. It's learning the lines to a very deep, deep level. You have to with Parks, where you have to give yourself over to it and let it just flow out of your mouth without thinking about it. And sometimes that's hard to do. What was the other question?
You can't get away with that.
I don't remember what.
We're deconstructing Calvito.
You know what I do, Paul? I live in the moment. I try to just see what's going on right now. Unless I have a punchline coming up, and then I squeeze whatever piece of furniture I'm sitting on really tight just to make sure it comes out correctly.
I'm going to watch for that from now on. Why are Dave's knuckles wet? Oh, he's got a punchline.
Now, present company excluded. Have you ever, as a writer, you hand over to a director, and the director hopefully has all the skills, but have you ever watched an early version of your play, perhaps not gone public yet, maybe in a rehearsal, where you've then said, that is not the character I envisaged in these words, and you've had to speak out?
Yeah, but not in any sort of bad way. I mean, I've had very good experiences.
Yeah.
So I've never felt, you know, that kind of writerly, thwarted writerly or something. And I usually have good relationships with directors, and I mean, to chat about it. And so, yeah, it's usually pretty close to what I imagine. And if it's not, then I like what they're doing differently.
Do you feel a responsibility? I mean, he's here, not only to the director, but to the writer, that you are true to whatever that original intention was, and not just what's been interpreted in a rehearsal studio?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I often ask Brian questions, and, you know, he'll answer half of them, but then maybe another half he'll wave me off and say, talk to the director. No, it's not my business. Which is...
I'd like to keep the...
You want to keep...
Channel, yeah. I like to keep the channels smooth.
No, I respect that. But I always... I've known Brian for 20 years, and sometimes I just want to take him and go, all right, now, Brian, come on. Nobody's listening. Tell me the truth. What's really happening in the scene? How should I deliver that line?
Do you think the young actors that you work with now are as good as when you were young?
No, I was terrible when I was young.
Yeah, but your milieu of actors, do you think the generation coming through, how they're being trained, are they different, or is it just acting is acting?
Well, there's definitely a difference between young American actors and young British actors, I find. The British actors are a bit more controlled. You know, it's more, they're more Gielgud, and the Americans are more Olivier, if you wanted to use two Brits. Often that the British actors are more technique oriented, and the American actors are more gut oriented.
Is this all you're ever going to do? I mean, there's going to come a point where, you know, no more chemicals can keep you alive.
You sound like my Jewish mother. Yeah. Aren't you going to do anything else with your life?
Well, she's going to say, when are you going to get a proper job? But you know, at 80 or 90, you're going to be one of those actors still trying to get work.
I am, because I have nothing else in my life. So I'm figuring that it won't be a bad retirement if I get over the fact that I never had children, and I'll probably never get married. It wouldn't be a bad thing to travel around the world and go out and have dinner with my friends a lot.
While you play Aging Wizards?
What's Aging Wizards?
Aging Wizards.
Oh, I'll be an aging wizard? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll be one of those long-haired men who don't care what they look like.
I mean, you're not looking forward to, you know, a C-grade part in a derivative, Harry Potter derivative film where you get to play wizard Calvito.
He's already a wizard.
I'll play, I'm all men are whores, and all actors are, and I'm a man, and I'm an actor, and all actors are whores too, and I'll do anything that you'll pay me to do without humiliating myself too much.
You can't say whore in the world anymore.
You can't say whore? Didn't Lenny Bruce die for us to have the right to say whore?
Moving on to the writer. do you worry about or think the ink will ever run dry?
I don't worry about it, no. I mean, because the track record is I keep coming up with some other new idea. Like I have three other things I'm working on now, which is... You know, I'm sure there'll be another one after that. You know, I'll get some idea and percolate in the back of my mind for a while. But
For people,
I do worry about being repetitious. So that I think is the larger challenge. Yeah. Like, have I already written that kind of moment or a line that's like that? And every once in a while, I hear some. I know that. Oh, that sounds like a line from a different play.
Oh, you mean like Woody Allen and his masturbation jokes? They're throughout his films.
Oh, okay.
Didn't know that.
Did not know that. No. I'm not so focused on masturbation as you are.
It's sex with someone I love. Don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so far, we've mentioned whores and Woody Allen. This is really going public.
Masturbation. Don't forget the masturbation.
People come and see the show from night to night. Do you notice different reaction when you're on stage? You go, and you can read that audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. You really have to listen to the audience. The audience is the other, it's almost like the other character in the play, so you have to play with, you have to listen to them as well, yes, absolutely. That's why actors get so freaked out by quiet audiences when you're doing a comedy, and you have to not let yourself get too paranoid about audiences that are quiet, because they may very well be enjoying it very much, but if it's a small house and no one laughed big at an early line, even though everyone enjoyed it, then they think, oh, we're not supposed to laugh, and then you can get a quiet house, and then you start having... Then there's another character in the play, which is your own mind, which you're having a discussion with as well.
And similar to, as a writer, you're working on different ideas and so on. What's the process for you of going with one and not another?
I don't... Well, they kind of just bop around on their own accord, just whatever one is flowing for the best. That's the nice thing about working on two or three things at the same time that are different. So if one kind of dies down in my imagination for a bit, then there's these other ones I can go work on. Sometimes I have like a morning play and a dinner play, you know. So one I'll work on over coffee and one I will work on over a beer at dinner time. It just kind of depends. And then there's the practicality is like one might actually have a deadline. So, but usually they kind of rotate around.
If I walked you into a room having printed out every bit of writing and any book you'd written and just laid it all out and you stood in the middle of it, I mean, could you imagine that? What might you do if it was all there?
I'd have some sort of strange crisis, paper-related crisis, and probably say, my, that's quite a lot of words. That would be very odd. Now, I think I know what I'm going to be dreaming about this evening. Thank you very much.
Do you remember the 20-year-old you?
Yeah.
I can't nod on an interview that's on the radio.
I remember the 20-year-old me very well, yeah.
What do you want to know about him?
I just wonder if he was sitting here, what his responses to the hearing this interview would be.
His responses to my answers in this interview?
And also the visual.
The visual?
Yeah, he'll get to see you.
Oh, seeing me.
Would he be happy with how you're, let's say, improving?
Well, if he's anything like me, he will think that he has not changed.
Oh, okay.
I still think I'm that younger guy, maybe not 20.
I still think he's a younger guy, too. So it's only when I look at older pictures, older production photos, I'm like, oh, that's when he looks younger.
Are you clinging either positively or hopelessly to a younger version of yourself? Because a lot of Americans do that, don't they? And it goes into the medical room.
Yes. Well, I think when you're one of those people who doesn't have children, it's like part of you doesn't grow up. You know, there are people who have children are discernibly different from people who never had children to me. And the ones who don't have children do have
I'm agreeing.
He's nodding on radio too, just so you know.
We're just a little bit more childish, let's just say, to use it more simply. So, and I figure that's the way to go. Because if I don't have all of those pressures that you have with children and the responsibility, then I may as well go with what I've got, you know. Although I do miss the joys of parenthood.
Well, and also, you have more hair, you don't have as much money, but would you have adopted Annie?
Adopted Annie? Not that one, no, but I do love girls, and if I ever have a baby, I do want a daughter, yeah.
Where is the line between David Calvito, the man, the personal life, and the actor? Are you a 24/7 actor in the end? Is that what you identify with, or are you able to step out of that role and go, no, this is me?
I just be myself on stage anyway, so like I just do different versions of myself, like in my first play with Brian. It was a two-part play. In the first play, I was good Dave. And in the second play, I was bad Dave. I don't believe it. I'm sort of like, not that I agree with his politics anymore, but David Mamet said, there's no such thing as a character. It's just words on a page. And if you've ever seen his work done at the... I almost said that. But part of me is, if you just act truthfully in the moment, say the words, you are the character. And you don't have to like be like Olivier and go put on a nose or a hump. Just live in the situation and talk as you would if you were in that situation. And if somebody else calls it a character, good for you.
I'm going to write a play for Dave where he has to wear a nose and a hump now.
And we'll be there. There's a lot of narcissism here at The Fringe. And if you ask somebody if they're a narcissist, they're bound to say they're not. Are you a narcissist?
Yes.
Great. Now, back to the writer.
Yes. The non-narcissist writer.
There are a lot of young people here wanting to be where you are at the Assembly with a successful play. Uh-huh. What is a bad play?
What is a bad play? My main rule is just don't be boring. Or if you are boring, be boring in an interesting way. But it's, to me, it's just don't be dull. And so maybe I overcompensate a bit with my writing because of that.
Boring in an interesting way.
I've seen, you know the director Eva Van Hove?
Yeah.
One of the reasons I like Eva's work is because even when it's dull, it's interesting. There's something about it that, so I don't mind it being dull for a section or something.
But it's also, that's difficult because a lot of people have argued for decades that Waiting for Godot is boring in a boring way, but others have said absolutely not. It's boring in an interesting way.
No, that's a very funny play. I mean, I think they see it as static, but I think that that's very much alive.
I've never seen it.
It's
showing here.
It's here. I know. I need to go to the International Festival and see it.
Either theatre or film roles you'd like to play before you die?
Who should I play in the theatre? Film roles, it's just what they offer you, you know. No, there's nothing, I wouldn't say there's any burning, I wouldn't mind, actually, no, I shouldn't say that. I'd like to play a film role, the film role that pays £500,000. That's the one I want.
That seems to go with the learning lines answer. King Lear?
All right.
I want to see David's Claudius.
Claudius?
Claudius, yeah.
If you were allowed to be in a bar and have a pint with Shakespeare, what do you think you might say to each other? On the assumption you'd read each other's work that day.
You know, it's funny. My question wouldn't be so much about the work itself, but as about how he goes about the work and what the process was, the practical stuff. And that's what would be of interest to me. Like, I wouldn't be so much like discussing the poetry of something, but rather just him as like the craftsman or the real life person who put the stuff together.
So when he told you, you know, we were off stage writing the scenes just as the others were being performed, does that excite you?
That would be extremely interesting to me to hear. Yeah.
Okay. Final question, because I know you're losing the thread here, David.
I'm looking for the woman who's going to save our play. Our new flyerer.
I'm just going to end the interview there, I think. Thanks very much.